We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 98. The season is officially over. It is curtains for the Yankees in 2016. A year ago at this time, Scott, we were gearing up for a one-game playoff against Houston. We were kind of hesitant going into the game, but it was one of those things, do or die, you never know what can happen. This year, not so much. We are just looking back on the season now. So how are you feeling now that the season is over? I know last week we were saying we're actually kind of looking forward to the offseason.
Yeah, I think at this point, we kind of saw the writing on the wall about a week and a half. You saw it, weeks in August. And I finally saw it after that Red Sox series. So it's been a slow death, I guess, and we've expected it. So it wasn't like it was abruptly ending.
Well, you know what
we knew this was coming.
The messed up thing was I saw the writing on the wall through July 31st, and I wrote the team off. And then they sucked me back in. And then I got pissed off.
Don't get started on this again.
When they shot me down again, when they ripped my heart out for a second time in the season, I kind of wrote them off for good then. But yeah, remember a year ago we were pretty excited at this point, and now we just have other teams to be looking at.
And how many games did the Yankees win last year?
87.
Pretty close. I mean, it wasn't the seasons as far as the win loss. If you're looking at the numbers, really weren't that far off. It was really just a tale of two different seasons though, because last year they ended so terribly, and then this year they actually ended a lot better than they were. I mean, they had a pretty good record after the All-Star break. So it was a very different couple of years in how they ended the season. So the AL East definitely was playing better this year. That's for sure.
Yeah, both wildcard teams, Baltimore and Toronto, won 89 games. So the Yankees finished 5 games out, a couple games ahead of where the wildcard teams were last year. But you're not going to win you've got to get into that 87 to 90 win range to win the wildcard. I think that's been established at this point.
Yeah.
So they're just slightly in that tier below, which is pretty crazy when you think about how bad this team was for 75% of the year.
Yeah, no, it's remarkable. I mean, what it shows is that we have positive things looking forward. We have a very good nucleus now of young talent, not to mention all of the kids that are going to be coming up and you know, who knows what they can do. So positive things moving forward. So yeah, I'm good with it. I'm at peace with the season, and I'm actually already looking forward to 2017, if that's even possible.
It's crazy that a missed playoff appearance this year is way more positive than a playoff appearance last year.
I mean, I don't even count last year as a playoff appearance. So that's the thing about the wild card game. I saw something. I think Tanyan Sturts tweeted it or put it on Facebook.
Whoa,
or something.
Whoa,
yeah, random Yankee alert.
You follow him? First of all, you follow him on social media?
Yeah, I actually think he followed me, and then I followed him back. But he is—he was talking about the playoffs and how everybody was getting like so pumped up to get to this wild card playing game, and he was very confused about the excitement level from these players, because he doesn't consider it the playoffs, and I kind of don't consider it the playoffs either. I really should just be a playing game. That should be called a playing game to the playoffs.
Well, they get to slap playoffs on it, and
yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of a nonsense marketing. Yeah, I know. But it really isn't.
I understand why the players are treating it like. I mean, if I was a player, I'd treat it like the playoffs, especially for teams that don't make it often. I mean, the Blue Jays and the Orioles playing in the one game wild card playoff. Those teams don't make the playoffs every year.
Yeah, it's definitely more exciting than not playing. I mean, you should get excited about that. You're playing another game, unless you really want to go play golf and go to Florida and hang out. Depends on what your priorities are.
Well, as you were saying, this year the Yankees are not that much worse off than where they were last year, which is insane. 84-76, 5 games out of the wild card, 9 games out of the division. Are you familiar with Pythagorean win-loss, though? I'm going to warn you that it's kind of a nerdy... We're about to get nerdy baseball for a few minutes.
You say we, but you told me about this beforehand, so I do know about it now because you told me about this. I was like, Pythagorean. I'm pretty sure I learned that at some point in school. It sounds really familiar.
Yeah, allow me to push my glasses up my face and
edumacate me.
Yeah. Pythagorean win loss basically just measures what your record should have been based on the number of runs you scored, number of runs that you allowed. It's in a way like every sabermetric baseball stat. You can call it bullshit or not, but all I know is that the Yankees should have been much worse than they were this year because they had a minus 22 run differential, yet they won 84 games. According to this stat, they should have won 79 games. So they were 5 games better than the sabermetrics said they should have been. And I think that I went back and I kind of found a trend with the Yankees under Joe Girardi. It's that when they have teams that should be in the 78, 79, maybe 80, 81, and 81 win range, he's able to squeeze blood out of the stone and get it to 85 wins, which is great because in 2014 and 2013, they had 7 more wins than their Pythagorean record should have shown. Yet, when you look at the teams that actually were very good and should have won 90-plus games like 2015, 2010, 2011, 2012, they were worse than their Pythagorean record showed. So my conclusion is that Joe Girardi somehow is able to take a team that's not very good and make them okay, but when you want to make that next jump, he might not be the guy.
Oh, boy. Who else's head is spinning right now? It's interesting what you're saying because I'm looking at it right now. For those of you that are listening, if you follow that, more power to you. But I'm looking at it, so I have a leg up. I understand what you're saying in the sense that he seems to get the best out of
mediocre players,
and then the guys who are very good, he doesn't put them in optimal situations maybe to get to their full potential. Is that fair to say? Is that fair to say what you're saying?
It's hard to put my finger on exactly what it is, but when you compare 2015 to 2016, 2015, they were on pace to win, it was like 94 games at a certain point in the season, and they totally fell flat on their face at the end of the season. And I'm not putting that squarely on Joe Girardi because that would be completely unfair. The players at the end of the day have to perform on the field, and they didn't. They had a lot of old players that faded at the end of the season. But I think a big part of it was Girardi's managerial decisions. Maybe leading up to that, if he didn't play the players in certain situations, they wouldn't be burned out. We've seen this with Dellin Betances this year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We saw
it last year too. We saw it last year with him warming up in a 5-run game.
Right.
You know, only to come in a 5-run game sometimes.
So I think there's certain decisions that happen between April and August 31st that affect you September 1st to September 30th that can make all the difference between 5, 4, 3, or 2 wins that you need to make the playoffs.
But this Pythagorean record doesn't really quantify that because it's taking the season as a whole. It's not splitting it up and saying, oh, he's a good, you know, early season manager towards the end. So I don't understand. I guess I don't get how that plays into the full spectrum, because to me, what it says to me is that he doesn't put players in positions, players who should be in positions to either play every day or pitch when they're supposed to, or, you know, he gives too many days off, or, you know, sticks to his veterans too many times, doesn't play a guy who's hot enough. Things like that to me would affect this particular stat, this Pythagorean thing. And that's where I see his issues. And I get that. That would make some sense because I think he does do that. I think when a guy is hot and he should be playing, sometimes he will sit him. And right. It's you know, we're all looking around like, what are you doing? This guy's the hottest guy on the team, and you're putting him down for a day off when he's 25 years old and doesn't need it.
Exactly.
So it's things like that I think that drive us mad. But, you know, if you're going to play the other side of it and look at the seasons like this year when he got way more out of a year than he should have. And if you look at it, what happened is he got the majority of the push, the better part of the season was with the young guys. So he he's proven that he can motivate young guys. He proved that in Florida when he won Manager of the Year. So this is a guy that, you know, if you're looking at those types of things, get excited. I mean, you should be excited because this is the season next year where Girardi's going to have, you know, chock full of young guys, and that's his strong suit. So maybe this is a good thing.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is the fact that I don't mind if Joe Girardi is the manager for the next couple of years, but when it's time to go win a World Series, I'm not sure I want him.
Yeah, I don't even know what's going on with this thing. I don't know what to conclude from it. It's making me dizzy.
I don't think I confuse people as much as you think.
I just, you know, I can see all the numbers, and there's a lot of numbers going on here with negative numbers and such, and that you lose me on that. But when I still go back to my eyeballs and tell me what's going on with the team and how they're
playing. Do you want to know the real story of what happened? I had a gigantic iced coffee around 9:30 this morning and just got deep into a spreadsheet.
Well, there you go.
So that's how you get Pythagorean win-loss on the Bronx Pinstripe Show.
Little Dunkin' Donuts?
No, no way. Of course not. So anything else you want to take away from this lovely math lesson I just gave you?
Nope, not. I don't want to take anything else. That was good. That was enough, though. That was good, though.
Awesome. Let's move on to the David Ortiz Yankees farewell ceremony. Essentially, it was a four-minute thing that looked like they just wanted to get it over with, and I was elated that that's all it was. They gave him a really tacky oil painting and then a book that supposedly had some memories in it.
It was so ridiculous watching Ellsberg go up and hand him some leather-bound thing. Like, nobody knows what he's like. What
it was
is
like,
this?
Oh, here you go. Thanks. Like, nothing.
I mean, was somebody scrapbooking and then like cut out the New York Times articles of David Ortiz or the Post? What was that?
So I understand why Jacoby Ellsbury gave it to him. Obviously, he played with him in Boston. But why right. the hell was David Cone also out there?
Yeah, I didn't get David Cone, and then Rivera.
I get Rivera because
I get Rivera, but I was just Rivera came back for that. I don't know.
He lives in Jersey.
I guess he came back for it was a strange thing, but it was well done for them. I guess it was way more than I was expecting.
Well, it was bare bones, which I loved, which I think just proves that they probably should have done nothing. But hey, you checked the box. You did a ceremony.
I don't think it was bare bones. We had one of our greats come back to give you something. I mean, that's a big deal.
I'm totally okay with it. But do you know who was not okay with it? And that was Nesson. I was watching the Nesson broadcast, and immediately after it was done, the announcers for Nesson started to call it classless. They said, "Where's Derek Jeter? Why wasn't he there?" They compared it to the ceremony that the Red Sox gave Jeter, which, if you remember, was like 45 minutes long and incredibly awkward. Why they were bringing Bernie Williams to sing to Derek Jeter at Fenway Park. It was just so over the top and unnecessary. And they said that the Yankee ceremony, they should have showed a video tribute and that it was classless. Dennis Eckersley literally said the words, "It had no class."
It's so ridiculous. I mean, the fact that they gave him something in the first place, what should be they should be elated about, because, you know, honestly, it was something that didn't need to happen. And it did happen, and that's fine. And he got his little thing, and it was weird, like him standing out there and the whole thing. And the painting was very strange, because I feel like he was in Yankee Stadium, right? But he was wearing like I'm pretty sure the jersey was a home jersey too. It was just a strange thing. There was a lot of weird things going on with that.
Well, it's Steinbrenner was like, it was 4 o'clock on that day, and he was like, "Crap, we got to do something other than this really dumb scrapbook." And he just...
Yeah, someone paint something really quick.
He went out to the Bronx and got one of those street artists to slap something together.
Or someone photoshopped it in like a paintbrush, and then they printed it out and put it in a picture frame so it looked like art. Yeah, I mean, it was weird, but, you know, I thought it was nice. I thought it was classy. I didn't think it was classless by any means.
I thought it was, like I said, pretty bare bones, which is what it should have been. If it was going to be anything, I'm glad they kind of half-assed it.
I mean, the heavens did not open up and pour on him. I mean, A-Rod's ceremony was shorter than that.
Not by choice, though.
And he got a cake.
Yes, so did Teixeira. I just think that we really need to put an end to farewell ceremonies.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I'm so tired of them. And the good thing is that there's not really many more players that have been around forever that will be retiring. I mean, I don't expect guys like Carlos Beltran or Adrian Beltre or anyone like that to get a ceremony, do you?
No, I think the only reason Ortiz got one in Yankee Stadium was because of the rivalry. That's it. I mean, Pedro never got one. Why didn't Pedro get one if Ortiz got one?
Honestly, like, ceremonies were not a thing back then.
I guess so. I guess Jeter kind of started it, that whole thing.
No, Mariano. Mariano was the
original. Oh, yeah, you're
Jeter.
Right. Mariano started it, yeah. So we started it.
Yeah, and at the time,
but they should relish on us. We're great champions. That's why they should.
At
we
the
are,
time,
we're amazing champions.
While Mariano and Jeter were traveling to all these ballparks getting these dumb gifts, I felt awkward. I felt like it was out of place. I didn't like it when it was happening for the Yankees.
Didn't someone get like an Adirondack chair made of like baseball bats in like that Minnesota?
Mariano got a broken bats from all the bats he broke.
It was broken bats. Okay, now it sounds better.
Still, my favorite gift that any of them got was Mariano got a sand sculpture of himself from Tampa, it was like a 10-foot sand sculpture. Like, he can't take that with him, and it was awful. It was so bad.
You want to talk about classless? What about the fact that they had a painting of when Mariano Rivera got shelled and blew a save?
Yep.
In Fenway. Yep. I mean, that's classless. That's literally of a moment that broke our hearts.
And I honestly think they realized that, and that's why they went super over the top for Jeter the next year.
Yeah, all right. So Eckersley needs to take a look into the past.
Why is
Eckersley even there?
Eckersley's the worst. He first of all, he saws that mustache from 1987. Ugly mullet.
He has to.
He pitched for the Red Sox for a few years.
Yeah, early in his career, right?
I think so. When he was a starter.
See, nobody cares. It doesn't matter.
Right, he's just the worst. He's the biggest homer, though, and it's unbearable. So I think we kind of touched on this maybe in our couple episodes ago when we ripped David Ortiz to shreds, but I was tweeting on Friday about my top five most hated Red Sox of all time, and a lot of people were tweeting me, and David Ortiz was pretty much on every list. But where is he in your top five of Red Sox hated of all time?
So I answered that. I replied to your tweet as soon as I saw it. Like I just gave like a very immediate reaction,
right.
And
gut,
I think
gut
I
got reaction.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I would have probably tweaked it a little bit if I had some time to think about it, because I forgot about some guys, to tell you the truth.
Well,
I guess
that's
like
the hard
suppressed
part. Yeah, everyone was like, memories. "Oh, why don't you make it a top 10 list?" Well, then it's not fun. You got to really think hard and long to get five, because there's a lot of guys to hate.
Yeah, that's like people ask me about my top five movie list, and I tell them that's an impossible thing to do because you got to categorize it. So for this, I probably need more than five, but if I'm going to go to five, Ortiz is definitely in there. I don't know the number. I do know who's number one, and it's Mike Timlin. I hate Mike Timlin. I've always hated Mike Timlin. I will always hate Mike Timlin. I think he's the biggest piece of shit in the entire world. So he is my number one and always will be my number one.
Yeah, but he's a relief pitcher. I mean, he wasn't even a closer. He was a seventh, eighth inning guy.
I hated him. I hated him so much. So much.
I mean, I have a guy like that on my list, so I understand, but...
Yeah. Anyway, he was number one. Ortiz is definitely up there. Ortiz is definitely up there, and you know, there's a... Curt Schilling's got to be up there, and I forgot about him on the first time
I
was going through it.
I forgot about him, too.
Yeah.
I think because he's had such a wild post-baseball career. I mean, he's a lunatic. He bankrupted a company. He is
his own company.
Off, his own company. He's spewing off on Twitter and Facebook about racist crap. I mean, it's almost like I forget he was a baseball player at this point. But then I remember that Game 6, 2004, and I want to puke.
Well, he's also gotten us twice. It wasn't just one time, and it was with different teams. So this is a guy who's not known as a Red Sox per se, but he's been on so many teams. But he got us twice.
Right.
And the more I think about it, the more I really hate him. And his mouth doesn't stop going. So that's another reason. I don't like him off the field either.
Kind of like
there's just a lot of it.
Kind of like how Josh Beckett got us twice.
Josh Beckett did get us twice, yeah.
Randy Johnson got us three times.
Because he was on the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
The fact is that I probably do need 10, but if I were to definitely in my top five, 100% are Timlin, Schilling, and Ortiz. The other ones are up for debate.
So a lot of people said Manny is in the top five, and I honestly disagree. I think
he never really bothered me.
Manny murdered the Yankees, probably than Ortiz.
But I never hated him.
I agree.
He's like an idiot.
Exactly. He was a big, lovable puppy dog. I mean, he was a puppy dog who took a lot of steroids and hit 500-foot home runs against the Yankees. But at the same time, he was, like you said, an idiot and kind of hard to hate that guy. One guy, though, that a lot of people were piling on, and I totally agree, he was number one on my list, Jason Varitek. The fact that he wore that douchey C on his jersey was just the worst. And he had a speech impediment, and his face looked stupid, and he does not get enough shit for leaving his face mask on during that A-Rod brawl. You're going to pick a fight with somebody and then leave your catcher's mask on? That is a big pussy move, Jason Varitek, and he does not get enough shit for that.
The other person that I didn't see on many people's lists when I was going through it was Johnny Damon. He was on my initial list because I actually I hated Johnny Damon. I mean, he's one of those dumb idiots too. But he was one that I really despised because he would put his foot in his mouth constantly. Manny never talked. He just didn't. He was like a lazy dude who was really good at baseball.
He just threw old traveling secretaries down.
And yeah, no.
Yeah,
that was
Manny.
Pedro.
No, yes, I know Pedro threw Zimmer down, but Manny, the reason they traded him out of Boston.
Oh, it was because they threw someone in.
He threw an employee who was the traveling secretary to the ground because he couldn't.
That was very confusing to me because all I thought of was Costanza immediately. And then I was like, Yankees. I'm like, is he confusing that with Don Zimmer?
So I forget where the Red Sox were, but Manny asked the traveling secretary literally last minute, like 2 hours before the game, to get him 50 box seats, and he couldn't do it. And then he went up to him after the game and threw him to the ground.
I just think the traveling secretary, the fact that that's an actual position is hilarious.
Yes, that is a Costanza move. cotton uniforms.
But yeah, the for whatever, Johnny Damon was a guy that I just could not stand. He bothered me so much. And I never really got on board with him as a Yankee. I never really liked him as a Yankee.
Even after 09? I feel
Yeah. I never got on board. I mean, like, yeah, I rooted for the Laundry, but I wasn't. I was never a Johnny Damon guy. Well,
Johnny Damon's on the list of old timers guys. He's always coming back.
I know, it's annoying to me. He's actually around more with the Yankees than he is the Red Sox, I think.
Yeah. I think the Yankees do more of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I definitely hated Damon, but he definitely won me over when he was with the Yankees. No one will ever top Jason Veritek for me, though. No matter how many times Ortiz has killed the Yankees, I still hated Jason Veritek more.
Yeah, that's my tip for me.
Speaking of more ridiculous things, over the weekend, so Ortiz played his last regular season home game, and Rob Manfred was asked about the 2003 PED list that Ortiz and A-Rod and Manny and a number of the other guys appeared on. There's a whole big controversy. There's a long quote from Rob Manfred. I'm not going to read it. One, because it's long, and two, because I cannot read out loud on this podcast. I swear I can read. Like, I do know how to read, but for whatever reason, I can't do it on the podcast.
It's the pressure. I don't think... Yeah, it's like you fall on the pressure.
It's like when you used to have to read out loud in school. It was always difficult. Anyway.
Today, Junior?
The quote basically gives Ortiz a loophole for the steroid list. He doesn't blatantly say, Manfred doesn't blatantly say Ortiz was one of the multiple false positives on the list, but he says we had more than 10 false positives on the list, and he was asked specifically about David Ortiz, so that strongly implies that he was one of the false positives. And then he went on to go talk about how everyone misconstrued that list and it was misunderstood, and that the whole reason they did it was just to sort of survey the league to find out if they needed to implement a drug program. Obviously they did, because like 90% of the guys failed on the list. And whether David Ortiz was a false positive and whether A-Rod was a false positive, the fact of the matter is I'm pretty damn sure David Ortiz has done steroids throughout his career. I'm not a guy who really cares that much anymore about steroids, because I think is one of those things that was so rampant that you can't really pick and choose who you blame and what you can. You can't take away wins or anything like that. But the fact of the matter is that David Ortiz continues to get a free pass for it, is horseshit, and I don't understand why.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to stop either, and because there's such a hard stance right now with him. You know, and he basically says that, you know, I'm not a steroid guy, I didn't do steroids, and there is no other proof besides that list. And when you get the commissioner of baseball coming out and almost supporting that stance of what he's saying, what are you supposed to do at that point? We'll see what happens when the writers vote, because they'll tell the story on if he was a steroid user or not. Really?
Yes.
So do you see him in the same like gray area as Piazza?
Yeah, I don't think Ortiz will be first ballot. I think he'll be very close first ballot. What do you need? 80%? Is it?
Whatever. I thought it was in the 70s.
Okay,
yeah,
70s. He'll be like Piazza, where it was he didn't get it on first ballot, but everyone knew he was going to get it second ballot, and then he'll wind up with 2% more than he needs the next year, and he'll be second ballot. I really believe that.
If only Don Mattingly found some steroids at the end of his career, he probably could have played for another 5 years, and he'd be in the Hall of Fame right now.
Yeah, but we wouldn't have had Tino.
Yeah, we would have had Donnie Baseball doing it.
Yeah, and I think the whole DH thing, while that may sway some baseball writers, because Edgar Martinez is not in the Hall of Fame and probably not going to get in the Hall of Fame. But I don't think it's going to matter when it comes to David Ortiz. I think because also people like him. I mean, that's the fact of the matter is baseball writers like David Ortiz.
I agree with that. I think most people outside New York like him.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of that jovial, you know, big, fun-loving guy. And it's annoying and disgusting.
Despite the fact that he's done numerous things to...
Yeah, that he's a giant douche and selfish prick. And he does all these things that are all about him. But he makes headlines being this jovial, big, you know, big personality dude.
Well, as far as Yankees versus Red Sox, we no longer have to deal with David Ortiz, which is nice. But the playoffs coming up, David Ortiz's last hurrah, I'm terrified. I'm freaking terrified that they're going to do something and he's going to have a deep run. I really hope he just gets swept.
We need our boy Andrew Miller to step up.
There we go. A couple more things of baseball news before we get into season-ending awards for the Yankees. Are you a Vin Scully fan?
You know, I never was I can't say I'm a Vin Scully fan because I never really... I didn't hear him very much, to tell you the truth, when I was a kid. And, you know, I obviously know the famous calls, the Kirk Gibson home run and certain others. But I don't know. I was never into him for whatever reason. And that's not saying that he's not good or any means. It just wasn't something that was on my radar.
Yeah, I mean, 67 seasons announced. He started in 1950. It's insane. Jackie Robinson was in his second year when he started.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The stats on Vin Scully are insane. And I understand he's the greatest baseball announcer of all time if you can somehow quantify that.
I love how you said the stats on Vin Scully are insane.
Yeah, they are.
No, it's good. That's a good way to put it.
It was like over 10,000 baseball games called, like 27 or 28 World Series called.
But what's his Pythagorean record? That's my question.
It's a great question. You know what? I will have an answer for you next week. But like you were saying, you never really heard him. Obviously, we're not Dodgers fans. But also, he stopped doing the national playoff games by the time we were really old enough to comprehend baseball. He was doing all of the nationally televised playoff games in the 70s and 80s, and you were young and I was barely alive at that point. So it's one of those things that I feel like our parents probably have more of appreciation for him.
Yeah, and I'm surprised I don't have more of a base knowledge, I guess, of Vin Scully and more of the listening to him and knowing who he was when I was a kid, because you know, I've mentioned numerous times on the show that I used to go down to Vero Beach when I was a kid. I had family there, and we would spend, you know, almost the whole summer there. So I was always around the Vero Beach Dodgers, and I would go to games constantly. And I was always around. The Dodgers were kind of like that second team. I never really root for the Dodgers, but if the Yankees were out and the Dodgers were in it, I would pull for them, type of thing. And I was always just around them, or, you know, during my summer. So, but I never really, for whatever reason, I never, ever, ever got into Vin Scully.
So, Vin Scully or John and Susan, who are you taking?
Yeah, I got to take John and Susan. I got to take John. I got to take John.
There couldn't be more opposite broadcasters than Vin Scully and John Sterling.
As far as what? As far as the style?
Yeah, the style.
The style is, I mean, they both have their own little old school classic way of doing it.
John Sterling is all about the heroics and the pizzazz, and Vin Scully lets the action on the field speak for him.
Yeah.
I know it's an unpopular opinion, but I found whenever I would listen to Vin Scully, and if you gave me a 5-minute soundbite and you said he tells an amazing story right here, I was entertained by it. But if I had to listen to a whole game of Vin Scully, I kind of feel like I'd be a little bored.
You like the guy that's more into the action. You like the John Sterling. Let's make this home run call and make it amazing and do a really good job or do a really terrible job because you like train wrecks.
Yes, John Sterling always keeps it interesting, whether he's actually calling the correct plays or not. It's always interesting.
Not many train wrecks with Vin Scully.
No, certainly not. He clearly has better eyesight than John Sterling too. Sometimes I think John Sterling just puts his head down and starts rambling and doesn't actually watch.
I think he watches the television.
Well, then he has no excuse.
I don't think he watches the live game.
He's just watching highlights.
I think he's watching it like literally a second behind.
Final bit of news is that our the greatest home run hitter of all time, Barry Bonds, is reportedly fired from the Marlins hitting coach. And if you had told me at the beginning of the year that Barry Bonds was only going to last one season as Marlins hitting coach, I would have said, yeah, no shit.
I would have been surprised that he lasted an entire season.
I think you and I at the very beginning were like, what the hell is Barry Bonds doing? He does not want to travel 180 days a year with the Florida Marlins.
Well, yeah, and the reason why he was the reason they gave was because his commitment level dwindled over the season. Yeah. Well, yeah, that sounds about right.
Sounds about like a guy who has 762 home runs.
That's what happened. That's why A-Rod took a job to, you know, hang out with some minor leaguers for like 2 weeks throughout the year.
I remember you said that you would be shocked if A-Rod ever appeared on a field with Yankee prospects.
No, I did not say that.
Yes, you did.
No, that is complete nonsense. I have predicted this entire A-Rod retirement, quote unquote, perfectly. This is exactly like I thought it was going to go down.
No. You said once that it was announced that he was going to be a special instructor, you said you would be shocked if the Yankees actually let him near these young kids and have any sort of mentorship.
That is not what I said.
I swear you said that.
No, you're wrong. I said that that's probably a position that he would do well in. I disagree. You're misremembering. You're pulling Brian McNamee. You're misremembering what actually went down.
Mark McGwire. I'm not here to talk about the past.
No, that's Rafael Palmeiro.
That was Mark. No. Rafael Palmeiro vehemently denied it. He stuck his finger in the camera, and then 3 days later, after he got his 3,000th hit, they busted him.
But Brian McNamee was Roger Clemens' boy.
Yep.
He was a strength coach.
He was the guy who hid the needles in the Coke cans.
Yeah, I mean, he was the smoking gun is what he was. But you're definitely misremembering this. We have videotape. You can go back if you really want to. But I thought A-Rod, and I still think A-Rod would be good with the kids because he's got everything about him. He's a great talent, and he's done so many things wrong that he's the guy like, hey, look at me. Don't do this. He's the perfect example. He's a perfect mentor.
The last few years, he kind of – 2015 at least. 2013 and 14 were a cluster, but 2015 I feel like he had a positive impact in the clubhouse.
Yeah, he finally grew up and got humbled. Finally, yes.
But I do love how he went down to extended instructional league or whatever it is, and he's just been like a basic bitch on spring break, posting a bunch of Instagram pictures.
Yeah, that's all he does. He must have somebody follow him.
He must have
an assistant that's just like constantly taking pictures.
I think he's just going around to each field. He's like, okay, you want to pose now? I'm going to be fielding a ground ball. I'm going to be taking swings in the batting cage. He posted a picture of him swinging in the batting cage, and I think it was Gleyber Torres standing off to the side watching him. You really think Gleyber Torres needs to watch A-Rod hit? You don't think he would have a better impact if A-Rod was watching Torres hit and giving him pointers?
Well, how do you know that didn't happen right before that? No, he just had to get that picture of it. That's all it was. It was a picture op. Torres was taking batting practice before that. And then A-Rod's like, no, that's not what you do. This is what you do. Watch my hands.
Do you think being A-Rod's social media bitch is a good or a bad job?
It's probably a fun job. You get some good travel in. You see the good sides of A-Rod. Maybe not, though, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. He might be very particular about it. He may be very, like, micromanaging the filters.
Well, it's a very vanilla Instagram and Twitter feed from A-Rod these days. I don't know if you saw, I posted a blog on Friday going through all of his recent posts and trying to figure out what he's been up to.
Yeah, he's a family man.
And he's basically a family man who makes really bad dad jokes and a guy who hangs out with a bunch of rich people.
So can we find that Starbucks that he goes to every day now that's a routine?
Right.
That's my question.
No, that wasn't Starbucks, was it?
Oh, yeah. If you look at the cup, you can see the branding on the cup.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he didn't really put the Starbucks logo in there because I'm assuming he didn't want to.
No, it's on the very corner. You can barely see it, but it's definitely the Starbucks
logo. What do you think he's getting? A macchiato?
My question is, where is it? We need to have spotters at this Starbucks to see what's going on.
It's in Miami, right?
Just bump into him so that we can get some resumes out there for A-Rod Corp.
That site is still under development.
Yeah, it's a different image though.
He added a couple more images.
Yeah.
hey, if you're gonna start a company, try not having the site under development for a full year.
That's A-Rod. Yeah, how long did it take him to do things well in his career? It took him a long time.
Yes.
The learning curve is a bit longer with Alex Rodriguez.
But you know what I'm excited for? He's back on Fox postseason.
Yeah.
He was good. He was good last year.
He was, I mean, yeah.
No, he was.
Yeah, he was good for most people. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, you're a Harold Reynolds fan. You're the only Harold Reynolds fan still out there.
Oh, I love Harold Reynolds. He's awesome. Tells it like it is.
I need a Pete Rose A-Rod show.
Is Pete Rose back too with the hair? With the hair black?
He's still on Fox Sports.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see it. I'll watch just to see what his hair looks like. To see if I can see black streaks when he starts sweating.
It's like every 5 weeks, Al Michaels will get a new paint job on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, but he gets much better paint jobs than.
Oh yeah, I mean
Pete Rose's paint jobs are like I think he goes to TJ.
It's like Crayola paint. I mean,
he's going to Mexico to get his hair dyed.
It's just paint.
It's strange.
All right, you ready to get into some team awards?
Let's do these.
All right, so this week we're going to be doing sort of a recap of the season. And then starting next week, we'll start to talk more about the offseason free agency and stuff. So we did get a voicemail from – I'm looking for the name. We got a voicemail from Greg asking about the offseason. We got a couple other tweets and mailbags asking about the offseason. We will get into all those next week. So thank you for those who have submitted.
No, we got a voicemail. That's exciting. Let's celebrate
that.
Yes,
we got a voicemail.
We haven't had one in a while. And let me play it next week. We will play it next week. We're not forgetting about you. This will be played. But I also changed the message on there because originally what it was my name and then if you're calling for Bronx Pinstripes. Well, I 86'd that. I said, this is Bronx Pinstripes. Leave a damn message. Keep it to 30 seconds. And this is the voicemail. Like I'm spelling it out to what it is. So everybody can now just rest easy that it's just a voicemail and it's 100% the Bronx Pinstripes voicemail. So leave your 30-second messages so you can get on the show, and let's blow this up in the off season because you know we're going to need some help with the content. So we need to hear from you guys.
I want you to sing into the voicemail like George.
Oh, a little. Yeah, I got that.
Believe it or not, Scott isn't at home.
Whatever it takes. If more people are calling in because I do that, I'll do it. We have our 100th episode coming up, so we got to do something special for that.
2 weeks. All right. So let's get into it. Most valuable player on the Yankees this season. The award goes to the one and only El Gary Sanchez.
Unleash El Kraken. It's beautiful. No, I mean, the guy, it was a different team when the guy showed up. He was unbelievable. Best start in baseball history. He's obviously going to continue it next year and going to hit 95 home runs. I'm excited for that. He's going to win the MVP. We're going to win the World Series for the first time, and then it's going to continue on because he's going to take us to the promised land, and I'm pumped up. Dude is like the MVP. Like if you could look up an MVP in the Encyclopedia Britannica, if that still exists, Gary Sanchez.
I was thinking about maybe going with Didi because you and I both agreed Didi was probably their most consistent player from day one to game 162. But the fact of the matter is the Yankees were a 500 team heading for mediocrity and lameness for 2 months when Gary Sanchez showed up, picked the team up, put him on his back, and smashed 20 home runs in 50 games. That is an MVP. That earns you the MVP. 20 home runs, 42 RBIs, a 3 war in 54 games. That's like a 10-season war. It's unbelievable. He threw out 41% of base runners, and the league average is 29%. Yeah, I know he struggled in the last week of the season. Only hit one home run and his average dipped below 300, probably killed any chance he had at winning the Rookie of the Year. But the fact of the matter is it looks like the Yankees have a superstar.
Yeah, and this is when we're probably going to spend a lot of time on Gary Sanchez and how the Yankees need to handle him. We started talking about this last week, and this I guarantee will be a continuing conversation through the offseason because it's, first of all, it's interesting. And the situation is interesting with him because he is a catcher, and you don't see guys playing the catcher position that can, you know, are all world hitters. You just don't see that. So there's definitely going to be some interesting things and how they can handle that and what they should do for that. But yes, he comes up, he changes the dynamic of the team. I mean, that's the best way to put it. You're right with, you know, we claim these are, you know, honorable mentions. Didi definitely, because Didi had a hell of a season. He was good the entire year. I mean, he was kind of that steady Eddie guy who, you know, was hitting 280. He was up around 300 for a little bit. He hit more power than we expected. Dude was good. Played a very good defensive shortstop. So, you know, that's definitely an honorable mention. And I got to throw my other honorable mention in there for MVP for the team, because I know what you're about to say next. But for the team, it's got to be Masahiro Tanaka as well. Has to be in the conversation because of the win-loss record when he pitched. And he was really the only guy that was, very steady throughout the entire year in the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, we'll recognize him in an upcoming award. Not worried about that. But like you said about Gary Sanchez, it wasn't just the impact on the field. Think about the impact it had for the fans. I mean, it was complete 180, and there was all of a sudden excitement around the Yankees again. And I think you and I said this last week that he is now the face of the franchise, and that's MVP type stuff. So I think you and I are definitely on the same page, as most people will be with Gary Sanchez. All right, least valuable player this year goes to the two-time X-Factor, Mark Teixeira.
He was a two-time X-Factor. He was the guy. And it was pretty true, because when he bombed, the team also bombed and had zero offensive production. The guy was just awful all year long. I mean, you know, a couple of big home runs at the end of the year that really didn't mean much, but it was good for the heroics and good for the ceremony and the farewell and all that. But yeah, he was a big disappointment. I mean, this was a guy that we were expecting to have a big year because of the fact that before he got hurt last year, he was on fire. I mean, this guy was in the MVP talks of Major League Baseball before he got hurt. And then you're expecting a guy to come back from an injury that was not really like one of those injuries that hampers you, or you wouldn't think hampers you long term, the broken shin or whatever the hell it was, or bone bruise, something that you just heal and you come back from. It just didn't happen. I mean, his knees started going away, and everything was bad. It wasn't. He did not find that same form he did early 2015.
Yeah, and I actually think that if you want, for anybody who ever may have accused Mark Teixeira of doing PEDs, I don't know if anyone did, but he is a guy whose body broke down when he was 36 years old, which is historically when players break down.
Right.
So he was actually kind of has evidence against PEDs. He had a very solid, very, very solid 13 or 14 year MLB career, which is normal. That's what happens when you have a really good player. When you're 36 years old, you can't hit 300 and mash 40 home runs. David Ortiz.
Right. No, it's true. I mean, this is the very normal life cycle of a Major League Baseball player, especially a big lumbering first baseman. I mean, he's a big dude. That's a lot of stress on the body. I mean, those knees, I'm surprised they lasted as long as they did. He's a big guy playing for as long as he did. He had a good career. He obviously had a phenomenal run in 2009 too. So we'll remember him for that. He went out. I was actually very surprised. I think you were too. We were very surprised when he announced the fact that he was retiring, but he saw the writing on the wall and he didn't want to go back and, you know, try to rehab and get his body ready an entire winter only for the fact that, you know, he probably expected his body to give out again at some point. And he didn't want to go through that whole mental and physical toll of getting ready, or at least trying to get ready for something like that. So the man can eat gluten now. He can just eat a hamburger and be happy about it when nobody has to tweet about the fact that maybe he is or maybe he isn't pregame. And that's it, you know, right off into the sunset.
That walk-off grand slam against the Red Sox, which prevented them from celebrating on the actual field.
That was pretty good, yeah.
That was awesome. I mean,
that was awesome.
That's one of the best things he's done since 2009. I mean, the Red Sox were going to celebrate right in our faces on the Yankee Stadium field, and instead they had to have an awkward, delayed celebration in the clubhouse where they were like, should we really celebrate? This is kind of awkward. We just got a walk-off grand slam right in our faces, but we did win the division, so I guess we have to celebrate. John Farrell came in and was like, guys, you can celebrate. And it was so awkward. And I mean, that was great. It was great that he did that.
So I had a softball game that night, and I caught the last three innings of the game. We go to like a Buffalo Wild Wings at the end of the, after our games. So I didn't really have the sound of the game. I just had the game on. And I saw that for whatever reason, they had a NESN broadcast up, and the broadcast had put, or whatever the broadcast had put up, said that the Red Sox had won the division. And I'm like, and I started tweeting from Bronx Pinstripes. I'm like, oh shit, they said they won the division. And I'm getting all mad. I'm getting so, I had no idea that the Orioles won or lost or whatever it was that the lost.
Orioles won, which eliminated the Blue Jays.
Blue Jays, that's what it was. I had no idea that was going on because I couldn't hear the commentary. I couldn't hear the announcers. And I was getting mad. I'm like, they gotta win this game now. They gotta win this game now. And Nesson's already celebrating beforehand. Like, the Yankees have no chance. So I was going apeshit in this Buffalo Wild Wings. and then to come to realize, I'm like, oh, everybody, I just get pounded by tweets back.
Isn't that the worst? When you tweet something and it's like you're half paying attention, so you tweet a hot take.
It was so immediate too. There must have been like 15 to 20 tweets like within 30 seconds.
You didn't delete it though, did you?
I did delete it.
No, you can't delete tweets.
I deleted it before I realized, or as I realized, like one, and then like 30 more came in.
So I'm fully on board with I do not delete tweets because it's you take the good and the bad with Twitter. Once you put something out there, it's out there. Occasionally, if I really misspell something, I'll immediately delete it and then post it with the correct spelling because I don't want people to think I'm a dumbass.
Yeah.
But if I tweet something stupid, I just leave it out there to hang. I guess it's a little different though with the BP account, and there's like 65,000 people.
Yeah. I totally disagree with you. So what I do is I delete, and then I what I did is I put up a response, be like, oh, whoops, my bad, and then so all the people that actually saw it saw my tweet. Yeah. So I was covered on both sides. So I acknowledge the fact that I was an idiot, but then you know people who are looking at it and you know 20 minutes later don't see it. That's the way you go.
Well,
I'm all for deleting tweets, though, by the way.
Despite the fact that he was the least valuable player for the entire season, that was a one of the better moments of the season, I think. And you got an honorable mention here.
Circumstances being what they were, yes.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You got an honorable mention for our boy A-Rod.
Yeah, because he was freaking horrible. He was a joke of a baseball player.
But now he's contributing to the minor leagues too, so that's pretty valuable.
Yeah, so he needs to make Gleyber Torres a superstar, and he needs to turn Jorge Mateo's mindset and make sure he's all right and good. And we'll talk about it, some of these minor league guys too, because Mateo had a down year big time in a lot of ways.
Yep. Yeah.
We got a lot of offseason to talk about these minor league kids too.
That'll be great to talk in the offseason. Maybe we can get some more of the minor league websites and some of the beat writers from the minor leagues on.
Yeah,
so
no doubt.
We are not talking out of our ass. Cy Young goes to my favorite quote unquote hashtag ace pitcher, Masahiro Tanaka. The stats, very good. 31 starts, which neither of us expected. 199 innings.
It was 200 innings, right?
199.2.
Oh, such a dick thing.
You think I'd make
you
that
were
up?
So happy. You were so happy when that one when I that one little, third of an inning.
I got a little twinkle in my eye. 3.07 ERA. He finished 7th in starting pitcher WAR at 5.4 and 12th in FIP. You know what FIP is, Scott?
Oh, I have no idea what FIP is.
Fielder independent pitching ERA.
Oh my God.
3.51.
Yeah,
12th in the league. It's a good number.
Worthless.
Not worthless.
It's a worthless, stupid stat that nobody cares
such
about.
Old school.
God, it doesn't make any sense. FIP? I haven't even heard of that.
Really?
No.
Have you heard of BABIP?
Just stop. I can't handle it. I can't handle the sabermetrics.
We lost Scott at exit velo.
Exit velo was annoying to me in the first place. I understand the exit velocity thing. It makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah.
But unless you're talking about Aaron Hicks and his exit velocity, then it makes no sense because you're talking about a guy.
Negative exit velocity.
But you're talking about a guy who can hit the ball really hard, but it doesn't do anything. It's stupid.
It's a really hard ground ball to shortstop.
Yeah, 95% of these numbers are dumb.
Even I'm putting numbers that say he's a good pitcher, though.
It doesn't matter. I don't even know what that means.
It means if you take out fielders, so it basically only measures...
Because that's how you play baseball.
No, but it measures how nasty... It's basically how nasty a pitcher is.
Why not just go to like the swing and miss ratio?
Because some of it can be misleading. If you look at Michael Pineda's swing and miss ratio, it's very good, but that guy sucks.
But his FIP... is no good. I can't even take this seriously.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about Masahiro Tanaka?
He was phenomenal. The guy is a true ace. Unbelievable.
No.
Doesn't need surgery. Don't worry about the arm. Yeah, it's fine.
I'm not worried at all about the arm.
You have zero concern
with the arm?
He pitched 200 innings.
You're lying if you have zero concern about the arm.
No, I don't. I haven't thought about it since the last time you brought it up.
Well,
I
he hasn't
think
pitched
about it.
Since the injury.
I don't think... What are you talking about? He pitched 200 innings. 200
no, I'm
innings.
Saying, since they shut him down this year.
They were going to throw him. They were going to throw him on Saturday. He was scheduled to pitch.
Scheduled. Oh, did not. What?
Yes, because they were out of it and they did the right thing.
No, I agree they did the right thing. But for you to say you have zero concerns with
Masahiro
Tanaka.
I don't. I have zero concerns. Zero concern.
That's asinine.
No, it's not asinine because I can't think about it anymore.
There's not one shred. There's not 0.1% of you that's concerned.
Oh, I don't even remember what it was. I forget.
It was a flexor mass.
I misremembered what the injury was because it doesn't matter because he just pitched 200 innings.
Flexor mass.
Doesn't matter.
Flexor mass.
Yeah. MVP. Was in the Cy Young contention conversation. Doesn't matter.
Cy not so young on the Yankees this year goes to your former favorite player, Nathan, quote, Carl Pavano, Evaldi.
Yeah, what a disappointment. That's exactly how you get out of my favorite list. You become, you know what? I was disappointed really in the makeup of Evaldi. That's what disappointed me the most. Because, you know, I know we'll get to the stuff. We'll talk about people with the guys on the team with the stuff, and everybody talks about when you say Nathan Evaldi, the next sentence out of your mouth or the next few words is about his stuff. I mean, that's what everybody says, and it drives people mad. And it's starting to actually drive me crazy too now. But the fact of the matter is the guy was good for a month in May.
Really good.
He was very good. And he shut you up for an entire month, and I was so happy about that. It was like two things. I got Evaldi doing well, and you can't talk any shit about him because he was phenomenal. And then what does he do? And what does he do? He gives up just a completely terrible June into July, and the dude, it's like he forgets how to pitch.
He got pulled from the rotation. He was so bad.
To me, and that's even worse than Pineda, because Pineda didn't even, when we were calling for him, didn't get pulled. But the fact of the matter is that is your mental makeup. The fact that I kept hearing that he lost the feel for the changeup or the splitter or whatever, you can't do that as a professional athlete. You can't do that as a professional pitcher. This is your job. That's one of your three pitches. Don't lose the feel for it. I understand if it's not great on a day and you have a couple other pitches to throw to. I get that. But the dude lost it for a month. That's mental. That is a mental problem, and he's got mental issues. That pisses me off.
Probably never going to see him pitch for the Yankees again.
No, and if we do, it's going to be on some incentive-laden contract, and it's probably going to be in the bullpen.
Okay, most improved player this year, and the only reason we're giving it to this guy I mean, it's Didi Gregorius, and we already talked about how Gary Sanchez is the MVP, but Didi is the close runner-up for MVP of the Yankees because he was the most consistent at the plate and in the field. He hit lefties this year, which is something I never thought he'd be able to do. 20 home runs, 70 RBIs out of your shortstop. The fact that he and Castro each finished with 20-plus home runs made the Yankees one of only four teams to have a double play combo with 20-plus home runs. The other one was the Mets with Cabrera and Walker, the Nationals with Espinoza and Murphy, and Houston with Correa and Altuve, who are probably the best double play combination in the league. But the fact that the Yankees were one of only four teams, that the Yankees with Robinson Cano and Derek Jeter and Afonso Soriano and Derek Jeter never did that. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and you know, I think the fact that we're calling him most improved is more of it's almost like a confirmation of what we saw at the end of last year also, right? because the dude was hitting, you know, phenomenal at the end of last year, and he carried that through and had an entire season of that, and that's why I think most improved is fitting, because he made it an entire season, and you know, he was the steady guy throughout the entire year. If he had a down year, I mean, this, I don't even know where this team would have been, because he was coming up and he had a lot of clutch hits too. It seems like every time he was up in a big situation, he was getting a big hit. So
he hit third, he hit fourth, he hit fifth, he hit sixth, he hit all along the lineup.
Yeah.
I think you and I agree we'd like to see him at the top of the lineup next year.
Yeah, I think
maybe
a two spots
or something
good,
like that.
Good fit for him.
But I mean, we can't. You and I are huge DD fans, on and off the field.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I love that he posts all the stuff about social media after the game. He's the first one to post on Twitter and Instagram after the Yankees win. And it might sound stupid, but I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, he's in tune. He's in tune to everything, and that's important nowadays.
Okay, so most disappointing player, I definitely think it goes to Luis Severino because. Yeah. This guy was the number four pitcher coming out of the year, and he had such a good season when he was called up last year. You and I were so excited about him. They finally have a young starting pitcher who can throw in the mid-90s. He looked great. And then he goes out and, as a starting pitcher, allows a 977 OPS against. Do you know how bad that is to allow a 977 OPS? That's Mickey Mantle's career OPS. He's basically allowing players to hit Mickey Mantle level Hall of Fame against him as a starting pitcher.
You know, we had conversations about Luis Severino being the opening day starter. That those conversations happened because of the fact that we thought he was going to come in and slide in as the number two. I mean, he was the number four because Girardi and, you know, Girardi hashtag his veterans. But Severino was the guy that we were expecting to be the true number two coming into the year. I mean, he was the guy that we were expecting the most from. We were probably expecting the biggest jump to really, you know, take the second half of last year, similar to what Didi did. Severino did not do take this into a full year, and the Yankees needed it. And there were so many failures in the beginning of this year. You know, it's unbelievable now that I'm looking back. There were just so many absolute failures, but Severino was a giant one, and he never really got it back. Towards the end of the year, obviously we saw what he did in the bullpen, and then he finally had a start to end the season. But this is a guy.
It wasn't a good start to end the season.
But this is a guy that we need in, you know, going into next year to be a contributor and a top level contributor for this team to take another level, because we know what the free agent class looks like for starting pitching. It's zero. There's nobody there. Bartolo Colon is the headliner of the free agent class.
Rich Hill.
Okay. They're both, it's 37 years plus is what we're talking about here.
Bartolo might be 50.
And the fact of the matter is that there, so unless we're trading for a guy, we're giving up one of our young prospects, Severino's got to step in and play a role and play a significant role in the starting rotation. So dude needs to figure it out.
I'm a little concerned the Yankees don't even know what they're going to have to do with him.
Well, he's proved that. I don't blame the Yankees in that sense. This is not a Phil Hughes situation where they put him in need because Phil Hughes was a necessity in the bullpen for 1 year. This is a guy that couldn't start any longer, and they were trying to get something out of him, so they put him in the bullpen. It was a very different scenario. I don't blame them for being confused because it's Severino's issue.
No, I know, but I'm basically saying it's. His numbers out of the bullpen are so good. I mean, he allowed 8 hits and 76 at-bats. I mean, it's a 105 batting average against. He's essentially as good as Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman out of the bullpen. That's how good those numbers are. Yet, he should be a starting pitcher, and he can't pitch out of the rotation. It's bizarre, and I'm getting concerned. Like, as if you're the Yankees, how much longer do you keep pushing this? I still think next year, spring training, you got to try him as a starter.
Oh, no doubt. I think that's the plan. I think the plan still in the Yankee organization is that Luis Severino is going to be a starting pitcher. But he's got to figure it out, and it's got to be relatively early. He can't go through struggles anymore. Because if he does, he's going to be relegated to the bullpen. And it's going to put the Yankees in another tough position, because then they got to fill a rotation spot. And, you know, at the same time, the Yankees can't go into next year depending on him like I feel like they did this year. They were counting on him to be, you know, at the top of that rotation, you know, towards the top of that rotation, and they can't do that next year. So that may change what Cashman has to do with free agency and with trades because of this. I mean, he has put the Yankees in a very difficult position.
Okay, so the next award is the AJ Burnett Man, He's Got Great Stuff Award. Who are you giving it to?
I mean, this is the guy that has to be Michael Pineda. You could argue that there's a timeshare between Pineda and Eovaldi because it's the same dialogue between, you know, when you're talking about both guys, like, damn, these guys have good stuff. But Pineda, like you said earlier, with that large swing to miss ratio, the swing to miss percentage, whatever the stat is.
Well, he led the AL in strikeouts per nine innings at 10.6.
That's crazy.
It's crazy that you, a pitcher could lead in such a tough stat to lead in and have such terrible stats across the board for the rest of them.
Yeah, no, it's mind-boggling, and it's because he gives up the big inning, and his mind goes to Jekyll and Hyde, and he just starts thinking about, you know, what girls look like on the beach in a certain bikini. I mean, like, the dude, I would not be surprised if he was in between.
Do you have insider info or something?
Who was the guy who was in, like, going to take a dump and was, like, liking girls
Panda.
On Instagram?
Pablo.
Yeah. See, that's a Pineda move. That's a total Pineda move. I could absolutely see that happening.
Yeah, but it's a starting pitcher. That's okay. As long as you're not doing it on the day you're pitching.
Oh, no, that's what I'm talking about.
Like, no,
that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Gotcha.
Like, the top of the order's up. I think I might have a couple more, a little bit more time to go hit up some Instagram.
It must be
I
hard.
See that.
It must be hard to wipe your ass when you have pine tar all over your hands.
It's on his neck. It's not on his hands. He's already thought of that.
The next award is the Roger Clemens "Just Calm Down, Dude" award, and I got to give this to the Toronto Blue Jays for being complete hardos.
That was the most ridiculous brawl. You know, reasons to start a brawl. And it had to have been Josh Donaldson in the dugout after that happened saying, oh, I'm pretty sure that dude hit me, because it was clearly not intentional. Severino, I think, walked the next three dudes or two guys after him. He's been wild all year. And Donaldson wears that big ass guard on the elbow, leaning over the plate. It really wasn't even that far inside. It was ludicrous. The whole thing was ridiculous.
Yeah, totally agree. And the Blue Jays are just an annoying team. All right, one is the Shane Spencer "That Doesn't Make Any Sense" award, and I'm giving it to Carlos Beltran for somehow leading the team with 22 home runs this year, even though he didn't play on them since the trade deadline.
All Gary Sanchez needed was another week.
I know.
Another week, and then he would have had
another series, maybe.
Another series, yeah. I mean, the fact that Sanchez was at 20 and played the limited games, and it's really just a sad stat, in all honesty, is that the fact of the guy that got traded at the deadline still led the team in home runs with 22. And it goes back to your X factor, because he should have been the guy.
This next one, it's kind of a tongue twister. It's the Brett Prince, a.k.a. Alan Embry, a.k.a. Daryl Rasner, a.k.a. Jose Veras, a.k.a. Brett Tomko, a.k.a. Preston Claiborne, a.k.a. Chase Whitley, a.k.a. David Carpenter Award. And it's going to Anthony Swarzak, who will be at the end of that award for next season's winner. That guy somehow pitched 30 innings and did not do one positive thing, yet Joe Girardi kept using him. Every year, it seems like the Yankees have a trash bullpen arm that they keep throwing out there, despite the fact that he sucks. And Swarzak was the guy this year.
The funny thing is, though, is that there just haven't been very many other options. Like, there's a guy that sucks, but I probably add three more guys to that list, in all honesty, for this year. So the fact that Girardi's throwing a guy out there that is trash and doesn't do anything positive, there's a few of those guys. So it's unfortunate, is what it is.
The next award is the Get Off My Team award. And
this is all you. Go for it.
You know I'm going with Chase Headley. Dude had zero extra base hits through the month of halfway through May. I describe him as vanilla ice cream on white bread with mashed potatoes on the side, because he does nothing for me.
I don't even know what
to
say.
So you agree.
I mean, I love mashed potatoes and I love vanilla ice cream. White bread I don't eat, but I like two of the three.
Vanilla, bland, nothing. Please get him off my team.
No, it's true. I do add chocolate syrup and sprinkles to it, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Moving on. The holy shit that actually just happened moment of the year. You and I were there in center field. Tyler Austin and Aaron Judge go back to back on August 13th. It will forever be known as Judgment Day. That was one of those moments that I just was, even though I witnessed it with my own eyes, I could not believe it happened.
We both had videos of this and completely screwed them up at some point. We were hanging out with Barstool JJ in center field on the Mohegan Sun deck, and Austin goes swap and hits the opposite field. And after I saw that, I'm like, oh, I didn't realize the opposite field power by then, obviously, because it was the first at bat. And then, you know, we see what he does, and then Judge just hits a freaking laser at us, and I felt like it was 6 feet from my hand, but in reality, it was a lot lower than that. But it was a hell of a moment. It really was.
interesting stat about Austin. He's been pretty clutch with his home runs. All five of his home runs have either tied or put the Yankees ahead this year. And four of the five have come in the seventh inning or later. So do you remember how Greg Bird had, I think it was 7 of his 11 similar to that?
Yeah.
Seems like Austin has the clutch gene.
You know what I don't get, and I know we're getting long in the tooth on this, but the fact is I don't understand why Austin didn't play for like the last 3 weeks of the season. He didn't play very much. He got sat for Teixeira quite a bit, and I don't
– Farewell tour.
That's what I'm thinking. It was Girardi with his farewell tour, got to win ball games, quotes, but Teixeira's going out there, and Austin was sitting, it seemed like, every day. And I didn't understand that, and every time he came in, he contributed.
Unless he was banged up, which it doesn't seem like he was, I totally agree.
Yeah, it was a very strange thing.
Last award is the That Hair Makes All the Difference award, and it goes to Ben Gamel, who unfortunately is no longer a Yankee. But a little stat for you here. The Yankees were 5-1 in the 6 games that Gamel played for them.
Got to give an honorable mention on that for the minor league hair of the year. Our new boy, Red Thunder, Clint Frazier.
Definitely. He will be the Flo Bro next year.
And Ben Gamel completely screwed up my t-shirt that was going to be Flo Bros.
You waited on it too long.
I wait too long on all of them, unfortunately.
You still don't have the Gary Sanchez one out.
Yeah, it's actually ready now, but...
Just in time for the season to end.
Yeah, I know. Really awesome timing.
All right, let's quickly talk about some of the playoffs coming up, and then we will get out of here. Wild card games, Toronto versus Baltimore on Tuesday, and the Mets are hosting the Giants on Wednesday. Who are you pulling for in these games?
I mean, I don't really give a shit who wins the Toronto-Baltimore. I kind of want to, I don't know. I don't want Baltimore, so I guess I have to pull for Toronto, but I don't even think that's possible.
Well, here's a good reason to root for Toronto, because they would play Texas, and that would be a rematch of last year's playoff game, and you know there's going to be a brawl in that series.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I'm more concerned on who gets to play. I guess Boston is already set, right? They're playing Cleveland. That's it.
Right. So you just got to hope that Francona can handle the Red Sox. I actually think Texas, if they make it, would be a tough matchup for the Red Sox. But especially because the Red Sox don't have home field advantage, which is a good thing.
Do they have it with Cleveland?
Nope.
Okay, good.
They're the 3 seed.
Nice. So that's the only way good for Francona. That's a leg up for Francona, and he knows that.
The only way they will play at home is if they play a wild card team.
Okay, so I think you want some answers here. I think Baltimore is going to win the Toronto game against Toronto, and I think the Giants. I can't see the Mets beating Bumgarner.
Yeah, the Mets are decimated.
It's pretty honestly. You got to give a lot of credit to the Mets even being in this position with the amount of injuries they've had this year, because they have been just torched. I mean, their entire pitching staff is gone. You know, a lot of their offense gone. They're completely decimated by injury. It's pretty impressive. And I don't think Terry Collins gets enough credit for the job that he does.
Mets fans would disagree, but okay.
I know. I mean, as an outsider looking in, I think he's definitely a baseball guy. He's definitely not a guy for the soundbite. That's for sure.
You got to figure the Cubs are kind of just been twiddling their thumbs for the last month, waiting for the playoffs to start. I would think. So, like you just said, the Mets are so banged up, but they killed them in the playoffs last year. And then would you rather face the Mets or the Giants if you're the Cubs? I feel like it doesn't really matter since you feel so confident, but there's a lot of pressure on the Cubs to get this thing done.
Yeah, I agree. But the fact of the matter is that the Giants still have 3 guys that could come out there and throw a gem on any given day. The Mets don't have that anymore, right? They have what? They have
Syndergaard.
They have Syndergaard. Is Matt still pitching or is
nope,
he hurt?
He's
is
shut
he done?
Down.
So it's just Syndergaard of those.
Bartolo!
And Bartolo, right. So it's, you know, I guess I'm looking for the Mets at that point. I mean, they're banged up.
Yeah, they're
their starting pitching is nothing like it was last year. It's a totally different team walking in there.
Yeah, and then the
totally different feeling too.
The Washington LA series is kind of blah. I don't really
know. I like that one. I think it's interesting.
I mean, both teams are good, but as far as storylines go, what do you got?
I don't know. I guess Corey Seager, you know, leading that team, coming in as the shortstop. You have the other kid, the Trey Turner kid, almost, you know, taking some of the limelight from Bryce Harper. So they have multiple studs on that team. Strasburg back in the playoffs. There's some good things going on.
Should be good. I think these games this week, the wild card games, should be pretty exciting. One game playoffs are always awesome. All right, we will get out of here. Before we do, though, follow us on Twitter. The show is at Yankees Podcast. Follow Scott at Scott Reinen. And I don't know if you noticed, but I changed my Twitter handle.
Oh, I didn't see that. I know you were talking about it.
Yeah, so I'm now Andrew, you're going to love this, _ Rotondi.
Still got the underscore,
well,
though.
The Andrew Rotondi was taken. Every combination was taken. I had to do the underscore, unfortunately.
Who's the real Andrew Rotondi?
I don't know. He's got like 50 tweets. Anyway, submit mailbag questions, bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, or you can tweet us or call the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. As we mentioned, we did get this mailbag, this voicemail from Greg. We're going to play it next week. More people call up the voicemail, send in mailbags. We're going to be talking off-season going forward. Hope you guys enjoyed the recap of the season. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.